Hi, this is Scott Wilkinson, host of Home Theater Geeks. In episode 172, I chat with Tyle Hertzens about headphone hobbyists, DTS Headphone X, and a new standard for a frequency response target for headphones. Coming up next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Home Theater Geeks is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Home Theater Geeks with Scott Wilkinson, recorded August 26, 2013, episode 172, The Headphone Hobby. This episode of Home Theater Geeks is brought to you by ProXPN. ProXPN is a virtual private network that allows you to use the internet the way it should be, anonymous and unfiltered. For 20% off your new account, go to proxpn.com/twit and use the code HTG. And by Tonks Coffee. Tonks offers a bi-weekly subscription. Tonks sources their beans directly from the growers. They're roasted and shipped within 24 hours, giving you the freshest coffee beans in the world. For a free sample, visit tonks.org/HTG. That's tonks.org/HTG. Hey there, Scott Wilkinson here, the home theater geek and director of content at avsforum.com. This week's guest geek is one of my favorite returning guests, Tyle Hertzens, the editor-in-chief at innerfidelity.com and expert in all things headphones. Hey, Tyle, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Scott. It's good to be with you again.
As always. Those of you who are watching the live video stream here at live.twit.tv or logged into the chat room at irc.twit.tv can post questions for Tyle as we go along, and I'll pass along as many as I can. So, Tyle, we met actually for the first time face-to-face just a few weeks ago at a big headphone event here in L.A. I think it was called HeadFi or some such, right?
It was just one of the HeadFi local meets amongst the folks in L.A., and they put on a great show. They had 150 people showed up and a lot of folks with the gear and vendors, and it was just a really good time.
It was. And, it was actually amazing.
I can't believe that's the first time I've met you face-to-face. I've seen you so much here so often. I really, it didn't feel like it was the first time I've met you in the flesh.
I know. But yet it was the first time we could actually shake hands. So I was really happy to do that.
Yeah.
And we might spend a little time talking about that event, actually. But I wanted to start, when we met there, you were about ready to leave on your vacation. And you told me what it was going to be. It was going to be a motorcycle tour around part of the country, staying at different spots along the way. And it got me thinking, you know, you're on your motorcycle. You got your helmet on, I hope.
Yeah.
And I assume you're listening to tunes. What are you sticking your ears for that?
Well, I used to use Edemotic ER6s, which are no longer made, and they were great under the helmet. The problem with helmets is that a good helmet fits very tightly around the head. And if the headphone sticks out or the earphone sticks out too far and pushes against the helmet or the padding on the inside of the helmet, you get mechanical transfer of sound energy to your ear, and it actually can be just as loud with or without the earplugs in or the headphones in. I have a pair of Hi-Fi Man RE400s, which are a very small in-ear headphone and fit nicely. What happened was I drove my FJR, which is a Yamaha 1300cc super sport touring bike, down to LA and back. And that's the bike I have audio on. And on that bike, I have a small Rolls passive mixer. I have my GPS, which gives me voice prompts of when corners are coming. I have a radar detector that goes boopity-boop and things like that when it fires off. I have a satellite radio so I can listen to tunes or talk radio. I have an MP3 player. They all go through the mixer and then to a small headphone amp.
You got a little audio studio on your motorcycle. That's hilarious.
You bet. Yeah, I got a nice little rig. I have to say though that I don't listen as much as I did initially. I mean, initially it was great. But first of all, I don't listen around town or when I'm in cities at all. Only when I'm out on the open road, because I think it's wise to keep your attention where it needs to be. And I have to say, of late, I really haven't been doing it at all. I listen to headphones so much at home that I just like to be out there on the bike cruising along. But the tour that the actual vacation that I was about to take was on a different bike, and that was a KOR, which is just an ugly, very utilitarian motorcycle for taking dirt roads. And my friend Paul and I went from one Forest Service cabin to the next in about a 900-mile loop. So we'd go from one Forest Service cabin, pack up, and the next day be at a different Forest Service cabin. And that was just a great trip. And I had a terrific experience there with gadgets, however, off the bike. I got an Enerplex kicker and jumper. The kicker is a portable solar panel for recharging gadgets, and the jumper is like a storage battery. And one of the problems when Paul and I do these cabin-to-cabin tours is we can't keep anything charged up because we're nowhere near power outlets for a week.
These cabins don't have power outlets?
Oh, no, they don't have bathrooms. They're cabins in the middle of the woods.
All right.
Yeah. Sometimes you'll get every once in a while, you may get some running water or something like that. But for the most part, they're primitive cabins. And so I got these, the Enerplex jumper and kicker, the solar recharger, so I could recharge my cell phone. And once I had that, I says, well, I can bring portable music along. I got this thing from Ultimate Ears called Ultimate Ears Boom, B-O-O-M. It's a little cylinder about the size of a tall boy beer can that you can recharge with this panel. And it runs on Bluetooth. And so I loaded up my phone with music, and we were able to have music around the campfire and whatnot. And it was just a really interesting time. I wrote an article about it on InterFidelity. If you just, I think it's still on the first page, but it's not too far down. If not, it was called Gadgets off the Grid. Off the Grid. So if you just search for gadgets on InterFidelity, you find it. But it was a great time. So yeah, I like being on the motorcycle and out and about.
Well, I was kind of interested about the earbuds in particular, and how you overcome the road noise. I mean, there must be a lot of road noise on a bike. Evan, as you're traveling down the road, and how do you overcome that other than playing really loud, which is not generally a good idea?
No. Well, first of all, they're in-ear monitors, so they seal in your ear and essentially act as a seal against outside noise. The noise fundamentally comes from wind noise on the helmet, so you get a lot of turbulence and just noise from the wind going past your helmet, and that could be quite loud. And it's when I don't have my earphones in, I do wear earplugs under my helmet. So,
oh, good for you. I'm really happy to hear that. Yeah.
Yeah, you bet.
I wonder, I would be interested. I would take a sound meter and stick the sound meter microphone up in there and just sort of see what kind of levels I would be getting. You probably haven't done that.
No, but my guess it's probably around 90 dB or something like that. It's pretty loud.
That's loud, man. I mean, OSHA recommends 85 no more than 8 hours. And so if you're at 90 and you're traveling all day long, that's not good. So
I always wear earplugs when I'm traveling, unless it's just around town where, you know, 25 miles an hour or whatever isn't a bother. But man, when I go on a road trip, I always wear earplugs.
Good for you. Good for you. Somebody in the chat room I saw earlier said, so subwoofers in the exhaust pipes?
Under the seat.
There you go. Well, let's turn back to the HeadFi event. I wanted to get your hit on some of that. I found it quite fascinating that there were, four or five rooms in this. It was in a hotel, I think a Marriott.
Right.
And they had taken over four or five conference rooms, not giant rooms, but pretty big, where people set up tables and set out their stuff and to listen to. And some of them were vendors of headphones and headphone amps and DACs and so on. Denon was there, I think. I can say it because it's the name of the company. Shit Audio was there.
Astle and Kearns were there. Odyssey was there. Quite a few.
Yeah, but then there were also quite a few individuals, just people who are way into the headphone hobby, who brought their stuff, their own stuff that they listened to, and put it out and let people check it out and try it out. And I thought that was just great. One of the things that really struck me was how much of a mod hobby it is, a modification, I mean. You know, mm-hmm. people go to great lengths to modify their headphones in one way or another, or their amps or their DACs. I mean, do they go in there with soldering irons and really get that deep, you think?
Absolutely. The headphone hobby is, first of all, it's very, very active. Headfi.org has a huge traffic. I think there's a million unique visitors plus a month. And it's been growing quite substantially every year. The meets are a great activity. You know, unlike audiophiles, headphone geeks are able to bring their gear in a fairly compact package. And move it around. You can't move mm-hmm. your speaker system around, but you can
much
move
easier.
Your headphones.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And so, for a long time, there's been a culture where headphone geeks get together and have meets and share their equipment, and it's a great place to listen to various different headphones and stuff like that. There will almost always be way more gear there than you'd find at any one audio store, unless it's specifically a headphone store, and there's not very many of them. So it's a great way to listen to new gear and stuff like that. But yeah, the DIY hobby is big. Everything from little headphone amplifiers built in mint tin containers to electrostatic headphone amplifiers that have $2,000 in parts in it alone.
Yeah.
So and then with the headphones, you know, there's virtually no headphone that has damping material in it.
Really?
Yeah. Now, how many speakers do you know of that don't have any damping material in it?
I can't think of any.
None. Right. And I could tell you there's one, the Sennheiser Amperior has a little bit of damping material in it. But other than that, there are very, very few, I would surmise, headphones that have damping material in it. And in measurements, both myself and other people who measure headphones regularly see ringing that is likely occurring because of a lack of damping inside the headphones. So headphone hobbyists will open them up and add damping material not blue tack, but this gummy stuff to dampen the casings of the material. Sometimes they add layers of epoxy in there. And so it's a very, very, very active hobby. In fact, Mr. Speaker's Mad Dog headphone is a modified Fostex T50RP electroplanar magnetic headphone. And that he remanufactures essentially that headphone into his own creation by adding pads and things like that. The pad on a headphone is an enormous effector on the sound quality of the headphone. And
you're talking about the ear pad, the
ear
part
pad
that
itself.
Actually touches your head.
Right. That's really one of the most common modifications is to find alternative pads for headphones that will fit. And so there's a whole lot of people who are just involved in figuring out who sells extra pads and what headphones they fit and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But at any rate, there's people who take an off-the-shelf headphone and hot rod it and then resell it. So
it's amazing. So
they've turned pro, essentially. Dan from Mr. Speakers. So yeah, it's a very, very, very active hands-on hobby. You probably saw lots of folks who are woodworkers and like old tubes topology amplifiers, and you'll find some really beautiful looking homemade headphone amplifiers. I actually just wrote an article. There's a Source Interlink Media, the company that is the parent company to Stereophile and InterFidelity and that home tech group of publications, is going to be publishing a ultimate headphone guide this winter season. And one of the articles that I just finished writing for it is about the headphone hobby. And one of the funny things is you say the headphone hobby and people would just look at what headphone hobby? How in the world can that be a hobby? And as you saw at that meet, it's a vibrant and active hobby. A lot of people know each other. As you saw, the vendors and the hobbyists and enthusiasts, they a lot of them know each other very, very well, and they communicate a lot. Any number of manufacturers have started threads in manufacturer areas on HeadFi to literally crowdsource the design of products. Vmoda has done that. Sentrance has done that with their new Hi-Fi Mate M8 headphone amplifier, where in the development of the product, they opened that process up to the community to ask the community what they wanted. So it's a very, very interesting and broad and deep hobby in terms of what people are doing. It's good stuff.
Serious. One of the weirdest headphones I saw there was, and I wish I had a picture of it, it actually was a pair of little speakers that were, you had a little frame that fit on your head, but then these speakers actually came off. They weren't actually attached to your ears. It was like these little speakers very near your ears, but not coupled acoustically at all. Do you know what I'm talking about?
It's probably the AKG K1000.
I think that's right.
It's red, two red kind of square-shaped straps.
Square-shaped things that kind of angle out. It almost looks like you have wings on.
Right, and the ear speakers on them can actually adjust in angle.
Right.
They've been around a long, long time and are probably one of the better imaging headphones that have ever been available. So very interesting headphone indeed.
Superru in the chat room is saying Grado 80s with L cushions with the tape mod.
Yeah.
You know what he's talking about there? Oh, look at there. Look at that. We found those, the AKG K1000 speakers.
Right.
And, they're just speakers that sit sort of an inch or two, inch or so away from your ears.
Yeah.
Look weird as hell, but, hey, if they image really well, great.
Yeah. And you probably saw the planar magnetic headphones there that are also very unusual looking. The Abyss headphones by JPS Labs. I don't know if you got a chance to see those. They also have a big square thing on the top of the head and big round, but they have pads that go on your ear. So they're a planar magnetic headphone. Very unusual.
Was that the most expensive setup there at the show? Because you pointed me to the most expensive setup at the show and said, go listen to that.
Probably. They're $5,000 headphones, although Head Amp was there as well, and Justin Wilson at Head Amp has an electrostatic headphone amplifier called the Blue Hawaii, and was driving a pair of Stax SR009s. Both products cost over $5,000, so that's a $10,000 rig right there. So that's probably the most expensive rig that was there.
Commercial
rig, that is, because there's some DIY rigs that can be, well, if you counted the maker's time, just ridiculously expensive.
Well, as you say, the people who are into it are way into it. So, yeah, it was fascinating to hear a bunch of different kinds of headphones as well. One of the headphones that we at AVS Forum have come to admire and seemed to be well represented there were these Pioneer SEA 1000s. I think they're like $50 on Amazon.
Yeah, I'm not sure I've heard those in particular. Pioneer does make a few. Pioneer makes quite a few headphones, and they have a DJ headphone that is the model number is some letters and then 2000 that I'm aware of. That's quite good sounding as well. The big problem with headphones is it's just really impossible to get your ears on all of them. There are just so many headphones out there.
Well, certainly one reason why the hobby survives, I'm sure, other than the modding and the customizing, is that you can never get through the entire field.
No, and it's, in fact, HeadFi is a huge resource for me because I sit there and lurk and watch the threads and see what people are talking about, and you'll see headphones get discovered and then the original posters, impressions, verified or not, and then if they get verified, the thread will get longer and longer and longer, and pretty soon you've got a pretty good headphone on your hands.
Right. That's, you're talking about headfi.org, right?
Right, head-fi.org, right?
Right, which is another headphone resource run by Jude Mansilla, who I had on my show here not more than a month or two ago. So
yep.
There's a big, big interest in headphones. There's no question about it. Now, speaking of headphones, I think you said you heard the show that I did a couple of, it must have been a month ago or so now, with Fred Kitson, the CTO of DTS, talk about Alphabet Soup, talking about Headphone X, this surround sound simulation in headphones.
Right.
And I want to get your take on that. But before we do, I think this is a very good moment to take a moment and thank one of our sponsors for this episode. That's a little tease right there, because that's what we're going to talk about when we get back. But before we do, I want to thank ProXPN for supporting Home Theater Geeks and the entire TWiT network. ProXPN is a global VPN, or virtual private network, that works with almost any internet connection. And what's important about it is that it keeps your traffic, your internet traffic, private. Sends it through an encrypted tunnel that really keeps what you're doing from prying eyes, which, as we know these days, is probably a good thing. Any online application can work with ProXPN, including your web browser, email, file sharing, instant messaging. Just about anything that you do online, ProXPN will keep it hidden from prying eyes, disguising your physical location and giving you unfettered access to the website, to any website or online service, no matter where you live or travel to. This encryption tunnel is really cool. It uses a 512-bit encryption tunnel, which is going to be pretty darn difficult to break, that's for sure. Works with OpenVPN or PPTP. Either way, you get to choose. You can protect yourself from your ISP's six strikes rule, and it keeps your personal internet usage private at work. Now, what could be better than that? Your boss thinks you're working, you're cruising. You can bypass internet filtering, blocked websites, geographical restrictions, and online video with worldwide servers in the U.S., U.K., Asia, and more. In fact, ProXPN makes your internet connection truly region-free. There's software for Windows and Macs that offer advanced controls, allowing you to select the programs and ports you want to anonymously route through ProXPN servers. It also works on your portable device, iOS or Android, allowing you to use your data plan or a public or corporate Wi-Fi with complete and total privacy on the go. There's a new ProXPN app for Android in the Google Play Store that supports OpenVPN. So if you're an Android user, you really want to check that out. Steve Gibson gave it a great review on Security Now, so we already know that it works great. Go to proxpn.com/twit for more information and to sign up. ProXPN premium accounts are normally $9.95 a month or $74.95 for the entire year, but we've got a special offer. Use the promo code HTG to receive 20% off the lifetime of your account. That's less than $5 a month for the yearly plan. And if you're not satisfied, you can cancel within 7 days for a full refund. So go to proxpn.com/twit and enter the code HTG. And we thank ProXPN very much for their support of Home Theater Geeks and the entire TWiT network. So, Headphone X. You and I talked about this at the HeadFi meetup as well. Right. And you had some interesting things to say about it. What's your take? You've heard it now, right?
Yes, I actually visited DTS and had a private demo, had a get had a chance to talk to their engineers and about it and spend a good bit of time with them. I did write an article on InterFidelity. So if you go to InterFidelity.com and then search for DTS, you'll see the whole article on it and get my full thoughts. It is, as you said on your show with him, very, very good. I think, though, it's in the very early stages, and we'll see this product improving dramatically over time. Fundamentally, it's a multi-channel. I think it can handle up to
11.1.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a very, very complicated thing. First of all, you've got the 11.1 channels of surround, and then they add to the Headphonics experience first some room acoustic signatures, some various aspects to the sound that would cause you to think it was in a room once you put headphones on. So the first thing that happens is they add some room acoustics to the sound, and then boy, this gets so complicated so fast. Maybe can I take a step back and make some preliminary statements here so people please. Can kind of follow along?
Sure, please.
So if you put a calibrated microphone a couple of meters in front of a very, very good speaker and play pink noise, which is equal energy in all frequencies, and record that or listen to that on the microphone, you'll get a flat response. So calibrated microphone, calibrated speaker, it's flat. Now, if you put your head where the microphone was, take the microphone away and put your head there and look at the signal at your eardrums, it will no longer be a flat signal because of a number of things. One is that your body acts as gives you a little bit of boundary gain in the mids, and so you get an elevation in level starting at around 300 hertz or something like that. And then also the shape of the concha ridge of your ear, for example,
That's the outer part of your ear, sometimes called the pinna?
Yeah, this part right here, though. This bowl.
Okay.
Right,
the
here.
Inner part, right. Just before you get into the ear canal.
Right. That bowl has gain at about the 2 to 5 kilohertz region. And then at higher frequencies, other things happen. You get nulls and peaks in the frequency response due to resonances in the ear canal and so on and so forth. So the bottom line is by the time the sound reaches your eardrum, it's not flat anymore. Now, to complicate that even more, depending on the angle of your head relative to the sound source, the sound will change at the eardrum. The gain of the concha ridge is different. The path lengths that act as comb filters become different lengths. Similarly, as you raise the sound source up and down relative to the head, the frequency response changes at the ear. Maybe most importantly, you have two ears, and like with binaural sight, you have binaural hearing, and if your head is to the side of where the sound is coming from, the far ear, it will take longer for the sound to reach the far ear than the near ear. That's called the interaural time difference, and that time difference will your brain will decode as the angle from which the sound is coming left to right. So the bottom line is that your physical being, ear, body shape, and so on and so forth, modify the sound that's getting to the eardrum, and your brain is amazingly smart enough to be able to decode all that to allow you to tell where a sound is coming from. And I'll emphasize, and we'll get around to it later, but I'll emphasize that in the region of 2 to 5K is where it's most sensitive to these changes. Basically, evolutionarily, the the ability to tell which direction a twig snap is coming from is really, really, really important. So
and that's your ears a fairly high frequency sound.
Right. That's that 2 to 5K region. It's this sort of sibilance region. That's where you're going to be, your head will snap to very rapidly. If you hear a sound like that. So
now there's another, before we get off that subject, there's another reason why 2 to 5K is so important evolutionarily, which is because that's where the meaning of language resides. That's where most of your consonants sounds are. And the meaning of language, of spoken language, is carried much for a great deal of it anyway on the consonants. Yeah. And so just to point that out, that's another reason, is so that we can communicate with each other most effectively.
It could be one of those chicken and egg things, though, the twig snapping came first, created the ears that were sensitive at 2 to 5K, and then our ability to speak was modified by one's ability to hear.
Good point there.
Who knows? You know, I don't. You know, you don't want to second guess Mother Nature, but
true enough.
But at any rate, so all these timing differences and equalization differences. There's another equalization difference, which is the far ear, if it's away from the sound source, will be in the shadow of the head. And as frequencies get higher, that shadow gets stronger and stronger and stronger. So each ear has different equalizations as well, depending upon where the sound comes, just from the shadowing of the head. Well, at any rate, you can imagine if you have 11.1 surround, you have 11 different speaker positions. And if you take any one of them, in order for that to be replayed over headphones and decoded by a person as a sound coming from a particular direction, you have to build a filter for that channel such that your brain thinks it's coming from that direction. And those filters are based on what's called the head-related transfer function, HRTF. Many people will have heard of that before at this point, because it's becoming more and more – people are becoming more and more aware of it, because it's really, really important on headphones. So the bottom line is that they take a – they assume a standardized HRTF. And there's been a lot of study done on the shapes of ears and so on and so forth, so they can create a standard HRTF that is an average of everybody's listening system. But, of course, it won't be exact for you.
Right.
You've mentioned on the show before the Smith Realizer, and that one is exactly for you, because they actually calibrate it with microphones in your ears.
Right. Now, I do want to point out here at this point that Fred – I do know that for example, one of the first soundtracks or pieces of music that came out encoded with Headphone X was the Man of Steel score by Hans Zimmer, mm-hmm. who had remixed it in 11.1. and the room you mentioned earlier, how they simulate the acoustics of a room in the signal. And in that case, it was Hans Zimmer's studio. And they even went farther and simulated Hans Zimmer's head-related transfer function.
Mm-hmm.
So while it is possible for Headphone X to simulate a given person, generally speaking, I think you're entirely right that they will take an average, which mm-hmm. is well known, and just apply that to the sound, to the signal that goes out to the general public.
Right. So Headphone X, they take the original 11.1, they add some information about the room to that. Then they take each individual speaker and put a filter, a head-related transfer function filter on it that's appropriate for the direction that speaker is coming from. And then they mix it all together into a left and right channel and put it in your headphones. And the interesting thing, or the difficult thing, is that the headphones themselves are all not flat, and they all will have ringing or changes in equalization and so on and so forth, differences in equalization from flat. And so to some extent, all the work they do in the head-related transfer function and room effects may be ruined by the performance of the headphones if the headphone has a lot of extraneous junk coming out
problems
of it.
Problems to it. Yeah, right. Exactly.
Because the things they do to the sound to cause it to sound like it's coming from a particular direction are similar to the kind of things that happen to the sound when it goes through a headphone that is not optimal. In other words, sort of these higher frequency 2 to 5K, but and really in headphones, it's a broader range than that, but they will certainly have artifacts in that region. So the last part of that equation is their ability to actually take an inverse filter, measure a pair of headphones into a standardized coupler, and then take an inverse filter of that headphone to erase its contribution. And in your interview with the DTS CTO, I think you tried to probe him on those issues, and it was somewhat difficult getting really clear answers out because they are they're doing very complicated things. But the bottom line is, it's my impression that in the long run, they will measure a variety of headphones and then award them DTS approval, and that you will be able to pick a particular pair of headphones in the application so that it will completely cancel out the effect of the headphones.
Yeah.
And the bottom line is that the effect is very, very good. They've really done a lot of homework on this thing, and they've really done a good job of creating these filters. The one aspect that I'd love to see, and I know you mentioned to him, was to incorporate head tracking. And as you know, the Smith Realizer has a head tracker on it. And just like those optical illusions where you stare at something for a very long period of time, a minute or so, and the image sort of disappears. And then when you close your eyes, you can see the inverse of that image.
Yeah. Right.
The same is true with headphones. So if you have your head clamped in a position and hear some sound coming from a sound source, you will have a harder and harder time over time figuring out where that sound is coming from, because it's not changing. And one of the important things that people do when they search for the source of a sound is to hunt, which means to wiggle your head back and forth, just, 5 degrees to either side or so. It's not very much. But they did these studies with people blindfolded looking for a sound source in a room, and then they tracked the position of their head as they were walking around, and you could see the head would do these wiggles. And almost always people would prefer hunting and end up going on a curved path to where the sound is, either this way or this way. But most people, to identify where the sound is coming from, they'll tilt their head slightly to the side and downward. Frontal localization is the hardest to achieve. And so if you tilt your head down and slightly to the side, you'll get a more accurate picture of where a sound is coming from. But you have to move your head so that the cues change, because the brain is not really listening to the cues themselves, but how the cues change with head movement. Mm. And you asked them about DTS about that, and mentioned the idea of the front facing or the user facing camera being able to, using face recognition software, being able to decode some head movement.
Yeah, on a smartphone or a tablet or something, facial recognition software. I remember that, and he said, "Oh yeah, well you've peered into our crystal ball."
Right. I asked the same question. In fact, I think I told you about that, and that was one of the places the question came from. But the thing that's really tough about that. Now, remember, the head-related transfer function filters are active on all 11.1 channels.
Yes.
And if you have head tracking in there, then you have to do the calculation real time without any lag for 11 channels to change the cues with the head movement. And I think that's just kind of really beyond what portable devices can do at the moment.
In terms of computational power.
Right. It's just the computational power to place a filter in 11 channels of sound and change that filter on a ongoing basis and do all the calculations real time without any lag. I mean, that's a pretty staggering task, actually. So
Yeah, I agree.
my guess is head movement may appear because, of course, the power of these devices goes up exponentially. So over time, I'm sure we'll be able to see it. But I think for the moment, their big hurdle, the mountain that they have to climb, is measuring and qualifying good headphones so that the user experience is really good. And I hope they're going to be discerning about that, because there's a lot of really bad headphones out there. And at some point, they should just go, no, your headphone doesn't cut it. And and I'd like to see that pressure on manufacturers come from another angle as well. So we'll see.
Yeah. Excellent. got a couple questions from the chat room. Caffeine Free Dave asks, I'm unpacking my Sennheiser Momentum headphones and AudioQuest Dragonfly USB DAC to start using them. I can't wait. What does Tile have to say about them?
I think they're both very good products. The AudioQuest Dragonfly is a dandy little gadget. The Sennheiser Momentum, this is a full size now because they now have a Sennheiser Momentum on ear. But the Sennheiser Momentum is probably my favorite sealed headphone. It seems to me it's very, very neutral. It measures very, very well. The only problem with it is if you have large ears, it's a little bit tight around the ear. And then it has a funny fit where it applies more pressure at the top of the ear pad than at the bottom. So there's a little, the ergonomics are a little bit off on it, but it's my favorite headphone and it's in my backpack when I go to trade shows and stuff like that.
How much is it?
300, I think.
That's not too bad.
No, it's in there with everybody now. $300.
Well, you mentioned head size and how these might not quite fit. The Pioneer SEA 1000s is another example. I found them to be a little loose. They have really big ear cups. They're over the ear, sort of sealed headphones, but they have really big cups that didn't quite fit my head, and the band was a little too big. And that was one of the mods that was being talked about at the HeadFi show, was people changing that headband so that it's kind of held the cups up a little more. So that's another area of modding right there.
Sure. And as I said, ear pads can make a big difference in terms of fit as well. Yeah, there are a lot of headphones are tricky in terms of fit. For example, but there's one headphone, Harman Kardon AE, or I can't remember the number now, but, or the letter designation, but it's their on-ear style headphone. And it actually comes with two different size headbands that can snap on the headphone.
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah. So some people are thinking about it.
Yeah. Duper in the chat room suggested that Loquacious in the chat room ask, but he asked instead, he or she, what about headphones for people with comically small, I mean, smallish heads? And you just answered that in one case. The Harman Kardon comes with two different headbands. Yeah. I guess another solution for people like that would be in-ears, because then it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Or look for a headphone that has a metal headband and just bend it.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, like Grado headphones, for example. You can bend that headphone all over the headband all over the place and make it fit just right. Some headphones you can bend the headband without too much trouble and help them fit right.
I was wondering about this in terms of modding. I guess headphone hobbyists don't really care about voiding the warranty, but certainly taking their headphones apart and putting in damping material or whatever would most certainly void the warranty, wouldn't it?
Yeah, probably.
So just be aware of that if you're going to be going and modding your headphones, because you don't want to then send them back and saying, hey, these don't work very well. Well,
let me give you an Let me give you, for instance, when modding a headphone isn't going to void the warranty, but it may substantially change the sound. Philips has a headphone called the X1, and this is a really nice full-size, around-the-ear, open headphone that has a big bass response and a very nicely done big bass response. So it's a really a good bass head headphone. The problem with it is for whatever reason, the cable has about an ohm and a half impedance or resistance for each conductor in the cable. And the headphones, I believe, are like 30 ohms or something like that.
So is an ohm and a half, is an ohm and a half in the cable itself a lot? I don't have anything
a lot.
To compare it.
Yeah.
Okay.
You want, I mean, like a half an ohm is about as much as I would find acceptable, generally speaking.
Okay.
But so the problem is if you have it also depends on the impedance of the headphone. So this headphone's a 30 ohm impedance headphone. Now, when you think about it, if you have a 30 ohm impedance headphone and the audio has to go through the cable and to the headphone and then back down the cable to get back to the amplifier, that's 3 ohms now total.
Yeah.
So that's 1/10 the impedance of the headphone. So right there, your damping factor is marginal. Damping factor should be 10 to 1. So the impedance of the headphone should be 10 times greater or more than the impedance of the output impedance of the amplifier or the impedance of the cable. But the real problem is that now you have a common signal that's going down one conductor on the earphone to the ground point. And on this particular cable, it's a single conductor coming back from the headphone. So you have all the current from both sides of the driver summing together and then going through an ohm and a half before it gets to ground, which means that the common current is going to develop a voltage across that 1.5 ohm resistance that causes crosstalk between the two ears. So this particular headphone, the Philips X1, which is otherwise a lovely headphone, is actually somewhat hindered in terms of its sound quality by the cable, and it's connectorized. So you just pull the cable out and then replace it with a good cable, and you've got better sound. So, you know, there's a mod that's not going to void your warranty.
And yet improve the sound dramatically.
And I wouldn't say dramatically, but certainly audibly.
Audibly, yeah.
Yeah, and change the experience somewhat for you.
B-Tree in the chat room is asking, do you guys, meaning you, Tile, review small-scale sound systems or speaker systems for PCs? Your website is related to personal audio, so do you ever get into computer speaker-type systems?
We certainly have done quite a few small desktop-sized speaker. We try to focus on the smaller desktop size speakers and even the more portable ones because AudioStream, a sister publication that does computer audio, tends to review those as well.
And I gotcha.
So we try, although sometimes we just stumble across something that we really like and we'll review it anyway. But we tend to look for the smaller stuff. There's a little speaker, the USB powered speakers called U Cubes. The letter U-cube, and they're USB powered little speakers that are actually pretty darn good. So, we do speakers sometimes, and I try to do Bluetooth speakers. Like I said, I did a review in this Gadgets Off the Grid of the Ultimate Ears Boom Bluetooth speaker, and it sounded surprisingly good. The difficulty there is, you know, while I've got a huge amount of experience with headphones, I really don't have a huge amount of experience with Bluetooth speakers. So it's a little bit difficult in once I get something in my hands, how good is it compared to what else is out there? Because at that point, I've really not heard a lot of what's out there. But we're working on it.
Yeah, give it some time. Yeah. Somebody in the chat room asked what that little speaker next to you is.
These are Harbeth HLP3 ES2 speakers. These are grandchildren of the famous BBC LS3. What was it? LS35A or what was the name of that speaker? You remember, Scott?
Ooh, yeah, I do. And I can't recall the name of it.
LS35A or something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
One of the original BBC speakers. Yeah, these are I looked for a long, long, long time for near-field speakers that I liked, and I really, really fell in love with these Harbiths. They are now discontinued and replaced with a similar speaker. I'm assuming that it's as good or better, but yeah.
Well, hopefully you'll get some in at some point and be able to compare them.
Well, I probably won't try because, again, they're a couple of grand a pair, so they're more often Michael Lavornia's bailiwick, if anything.
Gotcha. Okay, well, we got some more questions in the chat room, and there's one other area that I want to cover before we finish, but I would like to take this moment to thank our other sponsor for this episode, which is Tonks Coffee. Tonks is a small company made up of coffee connoisseurs, really serious people who believe that coffee is very important and that everyone deserves a great cup of coffee. And not only that, everyone can brew a great cup of coffee at home. You don't need to go out to the local barista and have them do it for you. You can do it at home because Tonks will send you the best possible beans, roasted and bought from various places around the world. They have a group of growers that they work with, and they will send it to you on a biweekly basis, on a subscription basis, so that you're never out of the world's best coffee. They roast them, roast those beans, and ship them within 24 hours of roasting so that they are absolutely the freshest that you can get. Like I said, ship within 24 hours. Home-brewed coffee can be just as good as anything in your favorite cafe. And you don't have to buy bags of beans from the grocery store. They come to your door. Super convenient. So if you're hitting the cafe most mornings, this is a much better and more economical way to get great coffee. I just got my first batch, actually. I was on vacation last week, and I hadn't, when I got back, my mail included this package, and I can't wait to give it a try. It's from Ethiopia, an area called Hagere Mariam. The producer is called Dairy Kochoa. And these beans look fantastic, and they smell great. Like I said, I just got back from vacation, so I haven't had a chance to try them yet, but you can bet the first chance I get, I surely will. So if you fancy yourself a coffee connoisseur, or you just love coffee, and who doesn't, you need to try Tonks Coffee. These guys are fanatical about delivering the best beans in the world, and they source directly from the growers, roast it, and ship it to you within 24 hours. So it's as fresh as it can be. And every 2 weeks, you get a new batch of incredible beans roasted to perfection. Tonks is subscription only, and they're offering a free sample to our listeners. Just visit tonks.org/HTG to get some for yourself, or send it to someone you know who appreciates the finer things in life. So visit tonks.org/HTG today, and we thank Tonks very much for their support of Ohm Theater Geeks and the entire TWiT network. So, Tile Hertzens, we have a little bit of time left. A couple more questions from the chat room. iPhone Kiki is asking, do they still make headphones exclusive to the HeadFi community, like the Grados they used to make in limited quantities?
Every once in a while, somebody will do something like that. It's kind of up to the manufacturer. So, John Grado was a big supporter of the community and did make a couple of HeadFi specific headphones. Jan Meyer at Meyer Audio in Germany is a big supporter of the community and will occasionally do a special headphone amplifier or run a special for the community. So every once in a while, not a lot, doesn't happen a lot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Alpha Omega says, you should try the Beyerdynamic DT Pro 80. Great for all day use, very light and extremely isolating. Have you tried those?
I don't know about the Pro 80. I've tried the Custom One Pro, which I wasn't much of a fan of, but okay. I don't know about the Pro 80.
Let's see.
I should mention, just to throw out another model number out there.
Please.
Beyer on the pro side, you can't get it on the consumer side, but on the pro side, they make a headphone called the DT250-250. It's a 250-ohm version. There's also a DT250-80, an 80-ohm version. But I like the DT250-250 It's a 250 ohm version. It's made for sound monitoring for electronic news gathering. It's a sealed, tight, kind of a closed, but also sort of a small, a little bit confining headphone. But it's a very good headphone. It's been around a long, long time, and it doesn't get enough props. So I like that Fire DT250.
Web 4239 asks, so if a person has a modest budget, what would be the choice of headphone and headphone amp? And he puts modest in quotes, so we're not quite sure what he means exactly, but Take that as you will.
Yeah, that's modest is a difficult term. I'll throw out a couple. First is don't get an amplifier if you want to stay low. So the headphone is more important than the amplifier. If you get a good sounding headphone, way more important than the amplifier. I mean, the amplifier is important, don't get me wrong, but the headphone is far more important. And nowadays, like the Samsung Galaxy S3 and S4 have Wolfson DACs in them, and they sound pretty good. So a couple of models just to throw out there is the COS Porta Pro at $49 is astonishingly good.
Say that one again. Your audio got a little wonky there.
Sure. The COS Porta Pro is very, very good. The Sennheiser PX100 and PX200 are very, very good, and they're around $100 or a little bit more. The Sennheiser Momentum, as we discussed before, and maybe my favorite headphone to recommend for somebody who really wants good sound but doesn't want to spend any more money than they need to is the Sennheiser HD600. These things go for around $350, $400, I guess. This is an open headphone for use at home. There is an HD650, which I don't think sounds quite as good. The 650 is a little kind of thicker and warmer sounding, and I don't think it really needs to be any thicker and warmer sounding than the 600. 600 is a very nice headphone. It's a high impedance headphone. For an amplifier for that, I would suggest the Headamp Pico DAC amp. Headamp's been around a long time, and this Pico DAC/amp is a great little piece. It's got a D to A converter in it for USB audio. I think it only goes up to 1644, but I think there may be a model that goes to the higher bit rates, but I'm not sure about that. It's a great little amplifier to use with a speaker, and sounds terrific. Paired up with the HD600s. One of the cool things about the 600s, though, is they're a high impedance amplifier, high impedance headphones. So you can use a high impedance output impedance amplifier with it and still get your damping factor. The Woo Audio makes a WA3, which is a great little output transformerless tube amplifier that goes for $400, I think, or something like that. Or the Bottlehead Crack. This is a DIY amp that you can build yourself. I think it's $279 or something like that for the kit. And it's just a lovely amplifier. There's even a mod for it called the Speedball upgrade that they make that puts in constant current sources. But at any rate, if you get a Sennheiser HD600s and one of those amps I just mentioned, you'll be at about the $700 mark. And we'll have sound quality, just really fabulous sound quality.
Mm. Taylor Karras in the chat room is saying the HD600 were too bass heavy for me.
Well, if they're too bass heavy for you, the 600 is one of a classic set of three headphones that were all around at the same time and sort of competing. The 600 is the warmest of the bunch. The Beyerdynamic DT880, which is also an open full size headphone, is a thinner sounding headphone. It's not as warm sounding as the 800. Nice and airy, really good for classical music. And the AKG K701, or the Quincy Jones Q701, or now the K712, I think, is the number. 712 is the latest iteration of those. But all those headphones, the K701, sort of splits the difference between the DT880 and the HD600. So the person in the chat room might like the AKG K701 or DT880 from Beyer.
Kathleen Friedave is wondering about the Grado SR60 or SR80. Are those ones you recommend typically?
I like the SR60. I found that the Sennheiser PX100 was better quality sound to me. But the Grado SR60 is a classic, been around for decades. It was priced nicely. It's a good little headphone. I think the 80 wants a better amplifier. So I think most people will get a little bit better user satisfaction from the SR60 headphone. Mm-hmm. And at a lower price.
Yeah. Now, F-Loop in the chat room has brought up the last subject of today and one that you and I talked about before the show. He mentions that Olive and Welty of Harman have developed a new measurement compensation curve to show how headphones sound compared with a 7-channel system in the room. And he wonders do you see this as something you might use in your own measurement data? And it's something that I wanted to bring up and hear your thoughts on as well, because it's something you brought up to me that I found very fascinating. So bring us up to speed on that, would you?
Sure. Well, we could dedicate a whole show to this because it's rather complicated, but it is tied in with our original dialogue about Headphone X. So again, if you have a speaker and put a calibrated microphone in front of the speaker and it measures flat, you put your head in there, and by the time it gets to the eardrum, it's not flat anymore. And the question is, what is that sound signature at the eardrum that is indicative of flat sound coming from the outside world? Now, as I said before, sound coming from one angle is going to have a different frequency response at the eardrum from sound coming at a different angle. So
right.
You have to start asking yourself, well, what is the sound source that we're trying to model here? And so for a long time, the audio engineering community has two very commonly established compensation curves. One is called the free field response, and that's the sound at the eardrum in an anechoic chamber with a speaker that's flat that is coming from directly in front of you. So the free field response at your eardrum is for an anechoic chamber with the sound coming directly in front of you. Mm-hmm. And then there's what's called the diffuse field response, and that's in a room with concrete walls, essentially, with a bunch of speakers in it, pumping up the room with a lot of acoustic energy so that the sound is coming at you from all directions. They put a microphone in there that's calibrated. They make sure it's flat, and then they put your head in there, and they look at the response at your eardrum in this diffuse field of sound. And that's called the diffuse field response. Now, the problem is, And this may seem obvious, but it's not necessarily obvious to, you know, all the world's acoustics engineers. But on headphones, my assumption would be that what you're trying to mimic, at least in a simple sense when you're listening to music, is the sound of two speakers. And so what you need to model is the sound coming from two speakers, 30 degrees off axis.
In a room.
In a nicely acoustically treated room. Now, just saying a properly acoustically treated room, you're going to get a whole bunch of different answers from a whole bunch of different people, you know,
right?
Because
yep.
People are going to have a hard time agreeing on what that is even. But the basic assumption that they're beginning to work on is that the head-related transfer function on headphones should be that from two speakers in a properly acoustically treated room. And that kind of just makes sense. Well, they set off to actually prove this. And I actually visited Harman International's headquarters a few months ago and spent some time with Sean Olive and I can't remember Mr. Welty's first name.
Scott? I can't either. I don't know it either.
But if you go to innerfidelity.com again and search for Harman, there I have a whole article on my visit there. And they've put together three different papers where they are discussing the development of a new head-related transfer function or a new compensation curve for headphones. And they've done – it's very, very complicated to go into, and I we couldn't possibly cover it with any justice too briefly. But they've done a lot of blind testing of people with various types of headphones and various types of compensation curves, and they did – go into the room that they believe is, you know, a properly calibrated room. I believe it was 7.1 surround room, but I believe they also do two channel in that room as well. But at any rate, they measured the transfer function onto a calibrated dummy head that they have, and drew up a compensation curve based on that response from that dummy head for headphones. And then they did a modified version of that curve that was sort of a little bit guesswork. You know, they were just kind of guessing at what might be good. And then they blind tested a bunch of people using these about six or seven of these various compensation curves. And in the end, sure enough, the modified room curve, the one that they sort of drew by hand, so to speak, turned out to be the preferred response. That coupled with, like I say, a very complicated array of research they're doing on this topic leads them to believe that the idea of speakers in a well-treated room is really the direction to go. And so I hope
the target to shoot for, in other words.
Yeah, yeah. And I need to say that in parallel, Paul Barton and the Canada's National Research at the Canada's National Research Council has been working on doing a very similar thing and has been studying the proper equalization for headphones. And so we have two tracks by two very, very good researchers who are investigating what the proper target curve for headphones is. And I hope very, very much that in 3 or 4 years down the road, we'll start seeing a better grip on what headphones should sound like and start seeing better headphones from it. I think it's their work is really fascinating, and I'm looking forward to it a great deal.
Well, I am too. And the really good news is that my next guest on this show will be none other than Paul Barton to talk about this very subject. So
I won't miss it.
Good, good. Meanwhile, we've certainly run out of time and then some. So I want to thank you very much, Tyle Hertzens, editor-in-chief at innerfidelity.com, for a fascinating hour about headphones. Thanks so much.
You're welcome, Scott. It's always a pleasure to be here with you.
Always great to have you with us. You can find Tyle's work, as I said, at innerfidelity.com. You can find me, of course, at avsforum.com. You can email me at scott@twit.tv. A lot of T's in there. And you can follow me on Twitter at htgeekscott, also at avsforum. And you can always find previous episodes of Home Theater Geeks right here on twit.tv/htg, also on the YouTube channel, youtube.com/twithometheatergeeks. Next Monday is Labor Day, so the Twit studios will be dark, and we will be taking a break from our labors. But the following week, as I mentioned, my guest geek will be Paul Barton of PSB Speakers, who's now getting involved in headphones, as we just heard. And he's going to be talking about this research about how to create the effect of the sound of speakers in a good room, in a good acoustic room, through headphones. And this research is ongoing and fascinating. And I know Paul will have a lot to say about that, and I'm really happy to have him on in 2 weeks. So I do hope you will join me for that. Until then, geek out.